It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. Fred, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling great. How are you?
I am better every day we get closer to people playing actual games. I was actually at games since the last time we talked because University of Georgia opened last weekend. So,
wow, pretty exciting. Even if they're not major league games, just seeing baseball played live in front of you must get you pretty excited.
Absolutely, and I saw a guy who probably is a first-rounder next year, so that was fun.
Wow.
But Robert Tyler is a long way from being a fantasy-relevant player, so let's get on with the guys who are. And this is why you listen to the Fantasy 411, as we bring you breaking news. We have just learned as we're talking, Dexter Fowler is coming back to the Cubs. That is certainly interesting for Fowler, and we'll start with what you think of him with another year in Chicago. He's similar situation, except maybe some guys take a step forward around it, maybe more opportunities for runs and RBI. What do you think of Fowler in a second year in Cub Blue?
Yeah, I mean, assuming he stays hitting out of the leadoff spot, I always think it's great when a player has a career year and then just nothing changes. I mean, we can talk about, you know, what parks he could have played in and how that would have affected him. It's always nice when everything's just going right for someone and then they just don't move. And I think that's what we'll see here. He's comfortable there. They're comfortable with him. Assuming he's, you know, and we can kind of decipher this on the fly. Like, is he their leadoff hitter? Do you think he's their leadoff hitter? I feel like he still is.
I am. I'm not sure what alternative there is. I mean, it could be Hayward, but I think if you've got those two guys, you put Fowler at the top. I mean, I think to me, and this is sort of what I was hinting at, is what's interesting to me about this is other ramifications everywhere else in the lineup. I mean, it raises a lot of questions to me. Does Hayward go back to right field? What does it do to your evaluation of Jorge Soler?
Well, yeah, it affects – and Schwarber. I mean, it affects them both a lot. Hayward's going to play every day. Fowler's going to play every day. That leaves one spot. You know, Schwarber can do some work behind the plate, but, I mean, if he's going to be a 500 at-bat player, it's going to come in the outfield. I don't know if they'll have an additional move plan for Soler. I mean, and for me, it's who hits second in the lineup. Like, is Zobrist – I thought Zobrist was going to be the number two hitter. So is Zobrist still the number two hitter, or does Hayward go there and Zobrist goes way down? Somebody's going to tumble way down to fifth or sixth. I feel like that's probably Hayward, and maybe Zobrist stays second. I don't know if you agree with that. And then everyone else kind of bumps down. It's a great lineup, but they have too many pieces right now.
I mean, if it's me, and I'm not the one making out the lineup, but if it's me, Hayward is almost the definition of a two-hitter. He's exactly the kind of guy I want hitting second. I like having a left-handed hitter there. I like the on-base ability. I like the number of things he can do. To me, he's just the definition of a two-hitter. I'm looking at this, and we're going to know a lot more in a day or two, and we probably should come back to this next week. I don't see how they don't give Schwarber lots and lots of at-bats. Soler seems to me the more raw guy, seems to me the guy who is less – I can keep Soler out of the lineup in a way that I can't keep Kyle Schwarber out of the lineup. I don't know how you look at it, but to me, it gives me a little worry in the back of my head, but I'm still pretty much full speed ahead on Schwarber because of what he's already shown.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you think about, you know, when you think about it, for a team that's going to try to win it all this year, if they don't need Soler, he could fetch a lot in a trade. At the same time, the Cubs roster is so good right now that you wonder if they'll just keep him and continue to develop him and have him be the fourth outfielder. And, you know, maybe he's right back in that starting trio next season because, you know, long-term they're going to need another outfielder. And it's not like that's really a roster with a massive glaring hole somewhere. I'm sure they could use probably maybe another reliever, but their pitching staff's pretty deep.
And one other thing, Fowler, if it is Hayward in the two spot, if you're talking Fowler, Hayward, 1-2, not that we didn't already like Anthony Rizzo and Bryant, but what that means for those guys hitting the heart of the order to have two really good table setters, to have very potentially a 360, 370, and a 390, 400 OBP in front of those guys, got to like that a lot.
Oh, absolutely. And guys who can move. I mean,
yep.
You know, Fowler, Hayward, these are guys who can score from second base on a single. You know, these are guys who can take that extra bag when they want to. So, I mean, yeah, this lineup is getting, like, as scary good as a National League lineup can be with still having that pitcher spot in it.
Quietly intriguing move. You know, we had this on the list, and I started looking up Jimmy Rollins, and I was sort of under the impression that Jimmy Rollins is done, and I think a lot of clubs were as well. But even last year, 12 steals, 13 homers, 71 runs. That's a guy who can help you in an NL-only, last year in an NL-only league, AL-only league this year. Do you have your eye on Rollins at all? Are you kind of watching how that develops, or is he kind of hands off almost no matter what?
No, I'm interested for sure, and he dealt with some poor fortune on batted balls last year, so his batting average could come up, especially moving to a hitter-friendly park. I mean, maybe it doesn't come up to 260, but maybe it could come up to 245 or 250, which makes him not much of a drain. I think we can maybe look at him as a bit of a poor man's Ian Desmond right now, and fantasy owners are still pretty high on Desmond, despite the fact that he doesn't have a team and that he struggled a lot last season. Well, maybe Rollins can't be a 2020 player, and I don't think Desmond really probably will be again either, but if Rollins could be a 15-15 player or something like that who hits 245 or even 250, I mean, that has value even in a deep mix league.
And I think the question is just, do you think he can do them? I just feel like the odds get longer against him every year, even given the sort of peripherals that you note. At some point, we're not talking about a guy who's going from age 31 to 32. There seems real collapse risk there, though I guess one of the things that you would point out is it ain't exactly like you're using a fifth-round pick on him.
Yeah, for sure. And you're not competing with players at a really loaded position. I mean, a lot of people aren't going to have really productive shortstops. So, I mean, maybe you draft him in the hopes of a dozen homers and, you know, close to 15 steals, and maybe you get lucky and you get 15 homers and 20 steals. You know, if you're expecting 12 homers and maybe 14 steals, I don't think, assuming he wins that shortstop job, which a lot of people feel that he will, I don't think he'll be massively disappointed. Like, I feel like if he gets 450 at-bats this year, he's going to be, I mean, you're right, he could just fall off a cliff, but he probably, even on the low end, gets you 8 or 9 homers and 11 steals or something like that.
Same division, also an infielder, also a guy who's kicked around a lot. It looks like Juan Uribe is headed to Cleveland. I like Juan Uribe as a ball player. You know, he's can do a lot of different things. He's a pretty good defensive player. He's got a little pop still. Looks like he's going to play third base at least to the start of the year. If he wins that job, if he emerges as the Indians' primary third baseman at the beginning of the year, which is not a lock, but looks like it's at least a possibility. How much do you like him in that case?
I think he's probably not a mixed league guy. I mean, to me, for example, his upside's lower than Rollins because he doesn't steal bases. So I feel like with Rollins, you could get, you know, maybe the dozen homers and some steals and not a great batting average. Uribe may hit for a little bit of higher batting average, but he plays a position with more options. And I feel like we're probably looking at a dozen homers, 15 on the high end. I do expect him to be the third baseman. I do think he can help AL-only teams, but I just don't think there's enough upside there for mixed league.
He is a guy who in the past has played multiple positions. If, and this doesn't look likely with that club, it's worth noting, but if he bounces around, if he gets some time at second, if, you know, I certainly hope Lindor doesn't get hurt, but if there's an opening at shortstop, if he plays three positions, does that affect his value at all for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at that point, maybe he becomes a nice bench player in a deep mix league where, you know, he's on your bench, but you can mix him in when there are minor injuries at shortstop, at second, at third, I mean, kind of all over the place. Like, that would help a lot, but as you said, it'll have to be an injury because they have pretty solid players at those spots.
Moving down our list here, Josh Hamilton, going to start the year on the DL. I just feel like there's an enormous gap between the name and the player at this point. Josh Hamilton last year had 8 home runs. Year before that, he had 10 home runs. He hasn't hit over 263 since 2012. Josh Hamilton, even if we didn't know he was starting the year on the DL, a guy worth anything more than a last pick in the draft flyer at this point?
No, yeah, I don't think so. And, you know, even if we didn't think he was going to start the year on the DL, which we do, I don't even think he's draftable in a mixed league. Even in an only league, I think he's just a dollar guy. I feel like we're kind of coming to the end here. And the Rangers have options. I mean, I get that if he's healthy, he'll play, but they don't need to force him in if he's not healthy. It's always really concerning when a guy goes through an injury-plagued season and then comes to spring training still injured. To me, that's like really the low as far as you can sink with an injury where, you know, you couldn't get over it all season, you had the off-season to rest, and you still can't get over it. Like, I'm really pessimistic now.
And that reminds me of another guy who, actually, you didn't send me, so I apologize. I'm going to put you on the spot here, but certainly I'm sure somebody you're thinking about. Another guy who fits that description that I am a little worried about. I have certain things that always kind of freak me out, you know, shoulder on a pitcher. I mean, this is not me. This is not some grand insight. But pitcher's dealing with a shoulder, it's scary. When hitter is dealing with his hand or his wrist, it's scary. And that brings me to Freddie Freeman, who missed a lot of time last year, and as he is coming back now, reports out of Disneyburg are that he's still not all the way back, that they're not going to go full bore with him as a result of this injury. I'm worried about Freddie Freeman. That just makes me go, back way off. Do you view him the same way?
No, I'm also concerned. And, you know, I often come back to what's the upside. And I know Freddie Freeman, when he's healthy, is a really good player. But hitting that Braves lineup, I feel like, really caps his upside for this season. I just don't think, like, there are weak lineups, and then there are really weak lineups. And that's a really weak lineup. And I just feel like even at his best, he maybe can't drive in 95 runs or something like that in that lineup. And so at his best, maybe he's an 85 RBI guy. And now with the injury, I just don't think it's worth it. If you're going to take a chance on someone with the draft pick you'll need to get Freeman, you might as well take someone who's healthy, and you might as well take someone with a better supporting cast.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a guy like Teixeira, who really it was basically last year before he was, you know, all the way back to where he needed to be. Just any time I see power hitter and I see hand or wrist, that is bare minimum a yellow flag, and when he's still dealing with it a year later, I mean, look, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I'm going to see the Braves a lot this year, and he's a very good player who guy you want to be good, but I would have a hard time really believing in him, even in a good lineup, that he's going to get to where he used to be anytime real soon.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the fact that around the same point in the draft you could just take someone like Eric Hosmer, you know, why not just draft Hosmer? I mean, maybe he can't match exactly the skill set of a healthy Freddie Freeman, but, I mean, Hosmer's going to hit cleanup on a better team. He's healthy. He probably drives in 90 runs this year. He hits for average. He scores runs. Maybe you don't get quite 20 homers. But, I mean, why not just take the security of someone like Hosmer rather than take the risk on Freeman, the risk both from his health and from how well can he do in that lineup?
Absolutely. Heartily agree. And we move on down the list here. Luke Gregerson says he wants to close. So do I. But I'm not good enough to. And he's good enough to close somewhere. But he's not better than Ken Giles. This is something that kind of gained a little traction. People talked about it some. I just view it as that's what I want a guy to say. If I'm an Astros fan, if I'm a coach, if I'm a manager, I want Luke Gregerson saying, yeah, I'm good enough to close. But it doesn't affect my assessment of that situation at all. Does it affect your assessment at all?
No, it doesn't. And if other owners in your league want to downgrade Giles because of those comments, then they can go ahead and I'll be happy to take him. And I think even the Gregerson comments, like the headline is, you know, Gregerson wants to close. But when you really get down to what he said, and we need to do that a lot nowadays with, you know, Twitter and short clips, you know, he said he wants to close. He also said that, you know, he'll pitch in the role he's given and he'll do a great job with it. So, I mean, he wasn't someone who came out and said, you know, if I don't get to close, I'm going home or I'm asking for a trade. I didn't get that impression when I read the full article. So, sure, he wants to close. And as you said, you want him to feel that kind of confidence. But it doesn't really seem where this whole thing is headed.
To me, the more interesting guy in that group is Gregerson. I mean, again, I'm with you. Giles is such a high level guy that I'm the strikeouts and the saves there. He's a guy I want high on my list of closers. To me, the interesting guy is Gregerson, who he's been a bit of a name for a while. He's got some power stuff. He's gotten some saves. And yet you kind of look at what he did. I'm not sure he's one of those guys that I am even picking up as a backup option. I shouldn't say I wouldn't, but I think there may be a little disconnect in his case between the name and the player. He hasn't averaged a full strikeout an inning in several years. He's not the guy who was just obliterating hitters in San Diego a few years back. I like him, but I don't love him as a backup closer. Is that sort of a fair way to put it?
Yeah, I mean, in AL only, if you want to handcuff him to Giles, I think that's wise. Or, you know, if you're just looking for $1 pitchers $2 pitchers in an AL only league and you want to take him on the chance that Giles has an injury and he comes in, I think that's fine. But to me, he's totally off like a mixed league radar. If you're going to draft a guy who's not currently a closer or a starter in a mixed league, he has to be a 100 strikeout type guy. I mean, if you want to take Betances, Andrew Miller, you know, Carter Capps, if he's not the closer for the Marlins, I get that. A 65 strikeout guy, just he can't give you enough value with, you know, four or five wins and a couple saves and 65, 70 strikeouts. Even with great ratios, it just doesn't add up.
Yeah, I exactly. We move on down the list. And one that I thought was really curious, Carlos Santana, maybe to lead off. I don't really know what to make of Carlos Santana, no matter where he's hitting lineup. He's a guy who's sort of been at a variety of different levels, and I don't really have a read on. Do you like him as a leadoff hitter?
I don't. I get where Terry Francona is coming from. So from a baseball perspective, I get it. If you don't love your other leadoff options, now I think they have a fine leadoff option with Kipnis, but I mean, if he doesn't like that, if he wants Kipnis another spot, and I get it, your leadoff guy doesn't have to steal bases. Santana can get on base. That all makes sense. From a fantasy perspective, though, I think about, you know, and he's not catcher eligible anymore, so what are we getting from Santana? Okay, so we hope we get 20-plus home runs, which has been a little iffy lately, but we hope we get 20-plus home runs. He's not going to help your batting average. He's not going to steal bases. I know he stole, I think it was 11 last year, but in general, he's more of like a five-steal guy. So without the speed and without the batting average, we need RBIs. And if he hits leadoff, he's not going to have a really high RBI total. I just, from a fantasy perspective, if I want him in a mixed league, I want him hitting the cleanup spot.
Yeah, he's the guy he reminds me a little of, just in sort of the shape of his performance, is Nick Johnson, who was also a guy that I don't think anybody was rushing to, a guy who would help your club, but I don't think anybody was rushing to draft. We had a little bit of an interesting comment, and we mentioned this beforehand. We kind of want to use this as a jumping-off point for something that I feel strongly about, having covered a lot of spring training. Mike Trout says he wants to steal more bases. So the first simple question is, when Mike Trout says that, and we know that Mike Socia certainly is not opposed to running. Mike Socia is a manager who's going to like to see his guys run. Do you buy it? When just strictly Mike Trout, when he says, I want to run more, do you adjust your assessment of him?
I'm not going to adjust it much. I mean, it raises the interesting question because we hear all the time in spring training that I'm in the best shape of my life, I'm going to run more, I'm going to hit for more power, I'm going to strike out less, I'm going to throw more innings. And we try to block most of that out. Now, then when Mike Trout says it, though, it carries a little more weight. So, you know, do we really believe that Mike Trout's more in control of his performance in a baseball game than most players, you know, when it comes to stealing bases? I don't know that he necessarily is. Like, I would give him a steal. If you want to give him a steal or two, we have him at 13 steals in our player preview. If you want to say 15 or 16 now, sure. But I'm not going to say 20 now because of comments that he made about wanting to steal more bases. Do you agree? Like, would you put a lot of weight into that?
I think the one thing about it is that if there is one category where you actually can control it to some extent, and in particular where a star player can control it to some extent, is stolen bases. Mike Trout can't go and decide to hit more home runs. He can't decide to get more base hits. He can't decide to score more runs. But he can decide to try and steal more bases, and if he tries to steal more, he'll probably succeed more. So, and the other part of that is that this is not a rookie saying this. This is a guy who is if he wants to run, again, Mike Socia is probably going to say, go get him, champ. They may tell him to cool it some to protect his health, but I don't think that this is a case where he's talking out of school and then they call him in and say, no, that's not okay. So, you know, I think that he is an unusual case, but my general feeling is, again, from having covered a lot of spring training and having heard a lot of guys say, I'm working on a changeup, or I'm going to go the opposite way more this year, or whatever it may be, they can try. But, you know, my general feeling on nearly anything, and again, stealing bases is kind of different. My general feeling on nearly anything but stealing bases is it's really hard to change the way you've done what you've done for 20 years that's made you tremendously successful, that's gotten you to the top of your field, and now you're saying, no, I'm going to do it differently. I'm just really skeptical of that. Nearly all of those, I say, oh, that's interesting, and I'll like it if I see it, but I don't buy it in the vast majority of cases. Are there any that you've seen recently that sort of catch your eye that you say, oh, maybe, or is it generally just sort of fun to read but not really all that valuable?
Yeah, not really this year. I mean, the maybe one thing I would pay attention to, if there's a player, say like a Pablo Sandoval, who really battles with his weight and he comes to spring training a lot lighter, then that might be something I take notice, because maybe it's part and parcel with a general overall greater commitment to the sport. I mean, if Sandoval comes to spring training 40 pounds lighter, well, that definitely means he made a concerted effort in the off season to get himself ready for this season, maybe more than he normally does. In general, though, I'm not going to buy into a lot of those things. Even going back to Trout, if listeners read the full article on our site and see everything he said, you know, he said he wants to steal more bases. I get it. He said that last season he stole a few in April, and then he had a poor run in May where he was thrown out a few times, and then he kind of lost his confidence, and then he stopped running. And he said, you know, this year he's going to be more confident and steal more. Well, when I read that, I thought, okay, so what happens if he gets thrown out the first two or three times he tries to steal a base this year? Like, are then we just back to square one? Could he steal even fewer bases this year? Like, could that lack of confidence, you know, just, you know, manifest all over again? Like, players have these intentions, and I get it, and I love the optimism, but there's always a reason why certain things didn't happen to a player before. And like you said, maybe a player does develop a new pitch or something, but there's a reason that Trout didn't steal a lot of bases last year, and he went into it in the article. There's reasons that certain players haven't gone the other way, you know, in previous years, and it's not always that easy to fix.
And another thing that I would note, this is always really the challenge, is there can be a disconnect, even with a good dude, good talker, honest guy. There can be a disconnect between what he tells reporters and what actually happened. It can be shorthand. He can say, oh, I just lost my confidence a little bit. And maybe what actually happened is that he went to the coaching staff and said, what's going on? And they said, back off. You know, these guys are not going to tell us everything. Even really good beat reporters who have really good relationships with players, they're not going to tell us everything. And they're going to say things that sort of that sound good. They're going to say things that people want to hear, not without exception. And again, I want to be really clear. There are good interviews. There are valuable interviews. There are a lot of them. And people who are good get better info than people who aren't good at it. But not everything that a guy says about what happened and how it happened can be taken at face value, because sometimes there's a message they want out. Sometimes they want to control it. Sometimes they may not remember it all that clearly themselves. You know, these guys do a lot of convincing themselves, here's what happened. And that's how you succeed, but it's not necessarily always how you tell the most accurate account of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, this is a real area of expertise for you, having, you know, covered the Cardinals for a while. But, and like, how often when you're in that role, how often were you taking down quotes from players and thinking to yourself, like, I'm going to report this, like, that's what I'm doing right now, that's my job, but I'm not really buying this?
It definitely happens, and that's why, you know, part of it is that's why the really good ones go and ask somebody else. Like, that's what being a reporter is that Mike Trout says this, and then you go to the manager or you go to a coach and you say, okay, so here's the way Mike put it. Is that the way you saw it? Not trying to turn somebody else, and look, not to get too inside baseball and too far out of fantasy, but that's one of the ways a beat writer can really make somebody mad, is that then it sounds like you're calling him a liar. And so you do have to be careful. That is the challenge. But you go to somebody else and say, okay, he said this, tell me how you saw it. But even then, it is a real challenge, because sometimes you've got somebody who's just kind of trying to control the conversation, or again, sometimes they just don't remember accurately, because to be an elite athlete, you've got to tell yourself a lot of things and believe a lot of things and control what you think. And sometimes that wins out.
I do believe the challenge for fantasy owners has changed from what it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago. It used to be about getting information. It's not about getting information anymore. Information is so readily available. There's so many beat reporters and so much information available so quickly. The challenge for fantasy owners now is to figure out how to best use that information, how to assimilate it into one final judgment on a player. It used to be, you know, year 2000, you're like, oh, I've got a tip. I got something I know that other people don't know, something I read that other people didn't read. It doesn't really happen anymore. Like, the information's available to all of us. It's how do you assimilate all that information, have a good final opinion on a player, and then use that in your league. And a lot of that does come now to deciphering, you know, reading between the lines of everything that's available to us.
No, that's a great point. You've got to read the whole quote. You've got to know who you trust that's covering this stuff. You've got to do that analysis that's beyond just seeing a headline or seeing a tweet. You've got to kind of take that next step and say, as a teacher of mine once said a long time ago, do you buy it? Is a really important question to ask at nearly all times. Okay, so moving on to more concrete topics. Giovanni Gallardo is officially an Oriole now. He slots in apparently near the front of that rotation, it sounds like. I can't imagine this really affects any other pitcher that we would have had any value, but Gallardo, as we've talked about, stays in the DH league, stays in a good league to hit, a good park to hit. I like him as an innings guy for a team that needed innings. I don't especially like him as a fantasy pitcher. What do you think?
Yeah, totally agree. I understand why the Orioles wanted him. He's one of those poster child, you know, for the difference between fantasy and an actual major league team. You know, he'll help the Orioles a lot by making 30 starts and throwing 180 innings. He's not going to help a mixed league team. His strikeout rate's low. His whip is high. Those are the two things that we really look for. His ERA might be okay. Like, if it could be sub-4, that'd be great. I'm not sure if it will be. But even if it was 3.7 or something, like a whip around 1.3 and a low strikeout rate, it doesn't add up in a mixed league. In an AL-only league, sure, you could take him and live with the ratios to get maybe hopefully a dozen wins or, you know. But overall, I think, yeah, he's not someone who's really fantasy relevant.
Basically, you just hope you can pick him up when he pitches in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, and that's not going to be often enough really to make it really worthwhile. I'll be totally honest. I was really surprised how well he did with the Rangers last year. I had totally, when he joined the Rangers, I had totally written him off. I didn't think he would help AL-only teams even really. I was surprised with how well he did. I just don't feel like walking that tightrope for another year.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. One guy that signed today, I can't shake the feeling for a lot of reasons that Dom Brown is a guy to keep an eye on. Dominic Brown, a guy who showed real power a couple years back. For whatever reason, he and the Phillies kind of seem to sour on each other. But boy, if there is one place, and it's not just the ballpark, if there is one place that a guy who's shown power, I get excited when he goes there, it's Toronto. We've talked some before about teams that know things. If the Blue Jays think they can get something out of a guy who's shown some power, I'm inclined to believe it. Are you intrigued by Dominic Brown as a Blue Jay?
Maybe. I might have been more intrigued had the Blue Jays maybe been more aggressive on him earlier in the winter. This kind of feels like maybe just someone who's left without a dance partner, so they, you know, so they're going to go together for now. I feel like he probably starts the season in Buffalo. I could be wrong on that, but if they come out healthy, big if with Michael Saunders, I feel like Pompey or Carrera will be the fourth outfielder there, but you never know. I guess it could be Brown. You'd love to see him spend the whole season in a clubhouse with Batista and Donaldson and Martin and Encarnacion and even guys like Colabello who were showing some signs last year of getting it. And, you know, like, it's just be a nice, really nice environment for someone who clearly has power and maybe just doesn't understand the best way to use it. He would be interesting for sure if he's on the roster. I'm just not sure. I mean, with the Jay Bruce rumors last week, who knows if that'll get fired up again. You know, I'm just not sure if he'll be on the roster, but if he gets there, then in an AL-only league, I would be interested.
Well, here's what I'm wondering, and we're getting way down a hypothetical road here, but I wonder anyway, what if Jay Bruce was on, you talk about them waiting a long time, I think it's a fair concern, but what if the Jay Bruce thing was in the works for a long time, and so they weren't moving on Brown, not that Dominic Brown and Jay Bruce are comparable, but broadly do some similar things. I put it this way. If you're trading for Jay Bruce, you maybe are not signing Dominic Brown even for depth. Maybe Bruce falls through and they say, well, okay, that's not going to happen. We want to take a flyer on a guy, I don't know, way down a hypothetical road, but just as a sort of counter to the they sign him at the last minute. Maybe they'd had their eye on him and waited for something else to fall through before they did it.
Yep, no, that's totally possible. I know the Jays liked Carrera last year. Like, they kind of liked what he did as a fourth outfielder. I wouldn't be surprised if he even makes the roster over Pompey. Pompey has that, you know, potential, but they probably still need regular at-bats for him. That's where Don Brown could make the team, if they decide Pompey should be a Buffalo and maybe he beats out Carrera or Saunders is hurt and they both make the team. I felt like they liked Carrera last year just in the sense of the Blue Jays aren't a team that needs a lot of pinch hitters. Like, there's just a really good lineup when everybody's going. So his ability to maybe pinch run or fill in spots defensively was nice. And maybe he's a little better suited for that than Brown. But not necessarily. And that's where I feel that's Brown's path. He hits a bunch of home runs in March for the Blue Jays. Carrera doesn't do anything special. They know Carrera can go through waivers. He's been through waivers lots of times before. They want Pompey and Buffalo, and here's Don Brown. Now he's your Jays' fourth outfielder, and we'll see what he can do. And there's DH opportunities there, too, because Encarnacion can play first base. So,
and I officially apologize because we spent way too much time with Dominic Brown. Let's move on to third base rankings. I think this is the first spot where we've had this many guys at Tier 1, and when we talked about the labor draft, we look at MLB.com rankings, it's borne out. You've got four third basemen in Tier 1, and it's hard to separate them. Josh Donaldson, Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado, Chris Bryant. How do you, just within that group, how do you separate those guys from one another? You've mentioned Donaldson as having the highest, as having a really high floor. How do you kind of differentiate between those guys? Because they're kind of different players in some ways.
Oh, for sure. And, yeah, to me, Donaldson's the most valuable because of the high floor, because even though he played on that super great level for just 1 year, he was also very good for multiple years before 2015. So for me, he has that. Like, even if Donaldson regresses, we still expect him to be excellent. And then to me, Machado and Arenado are kind of even. Different profiles, where Machado, you know, is more of a power speed and Arenado is a little more pure power. But playing half his games in Coors, I feel like he can bank on Arenado's power a little more. But to me, they're pretty even. And then for my opinion, Bryant's the fourth one in the group. I kept him in that Tier 1 because he is going in the first round of a lot of drafts and early second in a lot of drafts. But Bryant's inclusion in Tier 1 is a little more based on potential than actual production. He hasn't had a 30-homer season in the majors. He strikes out a lot. To me, he's not with those other guys yet for those reasons. But I understand why people are so excited about him, obviously.
Here's my question on Donaldson. And as you know, the RBIs and runs are really safe with him as long as he's healthy. And he's played 158 games each of the last 3 years. But here's my question on Donaldson. At 297 this year, he had 301 and 13. In between that, he had a 255. Before, they had a 241. It doesn't seem like it would be shocking if Donaldson – look, I don't think he hits 240, but I don't know if it would be shocking if Donaldson hit 260, 270. That doesn't reduce him from being a really valuable guy, but is there enough of a concern about that to maybe make him less clearly number one for you?
It's a bit of a concern, although I do think the park switch, in addition to helping his power, you know, helped him to hit for average. I mean, obviously, more of your fly balls go over the fence. That helps your batting average. So for that, like, I even feel like had he played those years where his batting average was down, had he played those years in Toronto, he would have hit for a little bit of higher average. I can see that concern with him, but just with the lineup and everything, I just feel like he's still the safest one. I can see, it's also, I can see the downside in some of the other guys, like Machado made huge 1 year jumps in both power and speed. So he could give back some in both areas. And Arenado, I believe, didn't have a 20-homer season going into last year and then exceeded 40. So, I mean, you can see the way he can come back down. I feel like all three players are probably top 10 picks. If they're not top 10, to me, they're top 12. So, like, I feel that good about all of them. And I haven't said that about the third base position in a while.
Yeah, it's and here's the thing. You move down a step, and you've still got a guy's – who can really help your club. I mean, I think this is what's interesting is if even if you miss on one of those guys, you know, you look at the next tier you've got here, Todd Frazier, Adrian Beltre, Matt Carpenter, Kyle Seager. Frazier at 35 last year and 29 the year before. Carpenter's a guy who's going to score a lot of runs based on recent history. Carpenter's a guy I want to ask about because, man, I really like him, but I don't entirely know what to do with him. 28 home runs last year. five over the three seasons before that. How do you grade his power? What do you do with Carpenter as far as looking at him that way?
Yeah, I feel like if his home run total regresses, and I think it will, I don't think it's going all the way back down to where it was. I mean, you want to look at those kind of what I often say secondary statistics and see, you know, did something change with Carpenter in his approach and what he was trying to do, or was this just good luck for one season and a few more fly balls went over the fence? When I looked at him closely, I feel like he did make a concerted effort to be more of a power hitter. Fly ball rate was up. Like, I felt like he was, trying to swing a little harder and make that happen and change his profile a little bit. Because that seemed like a concerted effort by a talented player, I'm more inclined to believe that he can be a 20-homer guy this year. And that's why I'm pretty excited about him in that tier. I mean, worst case, I'm wrong on that, and he goes back to being the really high on-base 100-run guy. But if it all comes together, you can get the high batting average, 20 homers, and the 100 runs.
Tier 3, Evan Longoria, Mike Moustakas, Michael Franco, Matt Duffy. The guy I really like in that group is Franco. Look, I know he doesn't walk enough, but, boy, he seems like a special player. It's not going to be a very good lineup, not going to be a lot of opportunities to drive in and score runs, but Franco seems like a guy with the opportunity to step up a level. How much do you like him?
I like the skill set, and my concern, and you hit on it, is the lineup and just him having to kind of carry a load there on a team that'll probably be in the bottom three or four teams in baseball, if not maybe at the very bottom in runs scored. So I always hate to tie like early round picks onto guys, like even anything in the first 10 rounds onto guys who I think are going to be in really bad lineups, and that's my concern with him. That has me liking just Longoria and the safety of him better. I just feel like Longoria is set for 20-80-80, 20 homers, 80 runs, 80 RBIs, and then maybe could be more than that. And I like Moustakas, but I could see Franco over Moustakas because of his potential, and I can definitely see him over Duffy because with Franco you get the home park, right, and you get and even with the lineup you get the power potential that you just don't get with Duffy.
All right, well, that'll about wrap it up for the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks for your time, Fred Zinke. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Let's say we do this again in a week.
Yeah, absolutely. Next week's outfielders, and that is a loaded position to discuss.